Okay, I think we're going to go ahead and get started. Am I super loud? You know, I get excited when I... Okay, let me know if I get too loud because I can't really hear. I get excited with this class, so you'll have to bear with me. Okay, so welcome everybody. Hi, relax. The first thing I want to say is that we are going to be doing some basic meditation. So if you're sitting in a chair, I want you to be sure that you can be comfortable. You see these cushions that are down there? Make sure you've got one for your feet if you need to, if your feet don't touch the ground or if your feet get cold or anything. So just grab your cushion and pull it on over. You'll see, because sometimes those chairs can get a little hard, or getting your feet flat on the ground can be a little bit of a problem sometimes. So let's do that. If anybody has their cell phone on, let's turn those off. And I'm going to make sure I have mine, too, because I'll get caught with that. And welcome to the very first evening of Buddhism in a Nutshell. We've got some more people coming in. Come on in, sit wherever you're comfortable, and you can. I've got chairs, lots of room up here. So we're going to wait. I can see some more people coming in back there. You're okay. We're a very relaxed class, so let's get that out there right now. And again, wherever you're comfortable, and it's fine if when we do some of the meditation, if you want to try sitting on a cushion and bounce back up to a chair, that's fine. Like I said, we're going to keep this very relaxed and open discussion. So this is our first night. My name is Sandy Carlson, and I'm going to be leading this class. And it's kind of nice when we first get going to introduce each other so that I can kind of gauge who all's here and a little bit of your knowledge of, let's see which mic I'm going to go for this one, unless Chris speak into that for just a second so I can hear.
Hi. I don't think is it on?
Is that on?
Yeah.
Excellent. Okay, guess what? Since I gave you the mic, just introduce yourself to me, tell me your name, tell me where you're from, and a little brief explanation of your experience with Buddhism and maybe what brought you here tonight.
Okay.
And we're going to literally go around the room because we're going to get comfortable. This is a good discussion group. So go ahead, tell me.
Hi, my name is Jenny. I'm from San Francisco, and my dad was extremely into Tendai Buddhism, and he was actually a priest and lived out in the mountains.
Okay.
He passed away 4 days ago, so I'm hearing about this 49-day sort of system.
Yes.
So that's what I'm interested in.
Well, welcome. I'm sorry for your loss. And this is a kind of a special time, and we can talk about that a little bit in class and maybe even after if you've got some questions. So you do have 49 days to do special prayers, and we have a prayer list that we can get your father on here at the center, too, that will be beneficial, okay? So, yeah, so welcome. And what was your name?
Jenny.
I will not remember. So let's just get this out there right now, but I'm going to try. Okay, yes, ma'am.
My name is Megan, and I found out about this place online about a year ago.
Okay.
I used to go to church every Sunday, and growing up, I'd always done that. And then as I got older, I just...
Is it on? Can you guys hear?
Hello? Okay. Ha-ha.
These are very directional mics, so you kind of have to make sure that you're... pointing it, not like you're eating an ice cream cone, just point it right at you.
So I stopped going to church a few years ago, and I've been trying to rediscover my religion, like where I feel most comfortable at. And so I've come here for a couple of Sundays now, and I really, really like this. I like it a lot, and so this is just the first...
So you've had a chance to hear Geshe Gyalakshada? Okay. Phenomenal.
It really is.
Okay.
So I really like it so far, and I've kind of done some research here and there, and I really like what I've seen so far.
Okay, checking it out. That's excellent.
My name is Dana, and I'm from New Orleans. And I heard about this place online, and I've always been interested in Buddhism, but I don't really know much about it, so.
Checking it out. Mm-hmm. That's good. Curious. Okay.
I'm Jack, and I taught English to young monks in Nepal between Thanksgiving and the 1st of February.
Okay.
And so I was at a Buddhist monastery, and so...
Which one? Kopan?
Adzum.
Adzum, okay.
Farping.
Okay.
But they didn't speak a whole lot of English over there.
No.
So I didn't get a whole lot from that. But since then, I have been interested and learned a little bit.
Okay, it's okay.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Hi, I'm Farzad. I'm originally from Iran, Tehran.
Okay.
I came with my girlfriend here, kind of the same reason.
Okay.
And, yes.
Excellent. Nice to meet you, too. Boy, we have some wide travels, don't we? California, Iran, New Orleans.
My name's Katerina, and I'm from Florida.
Okay.
But I've been in Raleigh for like 7 years, and I just have a general interest in Buddhism and meditation.
Okay. Excellent.
Hi there, my name's Rebecca. Yeah, we come from far afield. Obviously, from my accent, I'm from England.
Welcome.
But I live in Kerry. And I'm just here to find out more. I do a lot of yoga, and
okay.
I'm seeing a lot of overlap.
Yes.
Especially with things like meditation.
Yes.
So I want to pursue that interest.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. I love the accents I'm hearing tonight, all of them.
Hi, my name is Sue. I'm from originally California, but living in North Raleigh now. My daughter, who's 18, is interested in Buddhism and meditation.
Okay.
And so I'm starting to explore it a little bit, too. I've had a really rough year battling cancer and lost my father, so...
You are battling cancer?
Yes.
Okay. I'm a survivor.
I am now.
Okay.
It's been a rough year.
Yep. Yep.
But so that's why I'm here.
Okay. Well, welcome. And yes, there are some tools. I'm a cancer survivor too, so I can relate and I do understand. So there is light at the end of the tunnel, I promise. Okay?
Hi, my name is Kate. I'm originally from Connecticut, but I've spent a lot of time in North Carolina. I began reading about Buddhism and doing meditation off and on in an unsystematic way about 25 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I came here to try and be a little bit more focused and disciplined about it.
Okay, maybe still in the holes. Yeah, that's kind of where I went. Okay.
My name is Jeff. I'm originally from the Bronx, New York, and... I recently started doing transcendental meditation again.
Okay.
I used to
yep.
do it when I was younger.
Yep.
And I kind of dig the way it's making me feel. And my life's changed a little bit, and I just need to start getting a different perspective on some stuff. And I figured I'd give it a shot.
Okay. Welcome.
Hey, my name's Carl. I'm from Raleigh, or I live in Raleigh.
Mm-hmm.
I studied a little bit of Buddhism off and on in my life, but never really extensive or for extended periods, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to look at it a little bit deeper.
Okay, welcome.
Hello, my name is Michelle, and I live in Raleigh, and I'm just here to learn about Buddhism.
Okay, fine. Checking it out.
Hi, my name is Ruth Sewell. I grew up overseas in Turkey, Taiwan, and England. And had a bit of an affinity for Asian culture. So I'm just here to check it out.
Okay. Doesn't matter. We'll get all the way around. We're good.
My name's Dave. I'm originally from Boulder, Colorado, and I've never had much of a spiritual angle to my life, and I felt very decentralized. So my girlfriend here has shown me Buddhism, and I'm just in... just the exploratory stage. So.
Okay.
Hey, my name is Emily. I lived in Hawaii for a very long time, and I used to go to a Buddhist temple there. And it's been years since I went, but I think this is not a religion, but it's a best non-religion.
Yes. Yep.
My name is Amy. I'm from Pennsylvania originally. And I actually just did the Meditation 101 class here and really enjoyed it and just wanted to learn more about Buddhism.
Okay. Who did you take the Meditation 101?
I can't recall his name. It just finished, though,
David?
On Tuesday nights.
Was that David? David Mackla?
I can't picture him. He had glasses.
Okay.
He's very good. I don't
That's
recall
That's David,
his name.
Yes. He's phenomenal. He's a phenomenal instructor, yes.
My name is Amy also. I'm from Raleigh, and I guess I'm just checking it out also.
Okay.
I'm Courtney. I'm from Asheville, North Carolina, originally. I've always been interested in Buddhism. I took a class in college, and then I kind of haven't really looked at it since then, so I'm just trying to get back into it.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Vicky. I'm from Pennsylvania as well. I took a course in college on Buddhism, and I had gotten away from it after that. I recently went on a whirlwind tour of a lot of temples in Southeast Asia, and it sort of piqued my interest again. So I just want to check it out.
Was it a college? Was it a college trip or just your own personal trip?
I was there on business, and I took the time off.
That's fine. Okay, excellent.
Hey, my name's Adam. I'm from Raleigh. I have a friend who comes here pretty often, and she recommended it to me, so I've been watching some documentaries on the subject and thought it would be interesting to actually come in and check it out for myself.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Dan. I finished the Meditation 101 class about a week ago, so I thought I'd come here and see a little bit more behind what's behind it with Buddhism.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth, and I've always been interested in Buddhism. I've never taken the step to go forward with it, but I talked my son into coming to class with me. So we're going to try it together.
Okay.
I'm Benjamin. I'm from Apex, North Carolina, and I took a religious studies class at my high school, and it kind of got me interested in, like, Buddhism and, you know, different, like, ways of thought, so I thought I'd come check it out.
Hey, my name is Brandon. I think I'm from Earth, and it was on my list of to-dos to find a meditation center this week. So, right, I live like right around the corner. I've driven by it a bunch, and I wanted to come check it out. And then I really wanted to take the Meditation 101 class, but it was done. But, right, synchronicities, this class started today, so here I am.
Welcome.
My name is Ruth, and the only way I can describe it is that I feel like Buddhism is drawing me in. Anytime I've been close to it, whether I'm reading about it, I had a student from Burma, I think it's Burma, who is a Buddhist. I've just been sort of transported to another place, and that's not only how I can't describe it any other way.
Okay, it's
I think
okay.
I need to be here.
Okay.
My name's Chris. I'm from Virginia, but I've lived here for the last 4 years. And I've always had kind of a vague passing interest in Buddhism and realized a couple weeks ago that there was nothing stopping me from exploring it. So I found this place online and thought I'd see what comes next.
Okay.
My name's Connie. I've always had a fascination with Buddhism and have studied it throughout the years over and over, but more importantly, I've always been drawn to the joy and the peacefulness of the Dalai Lama.
Yeah.
And I'm a huge, huge fan. So, and I found you last year online and finally decided now was the time, and luckily you had a class starting.
Okay.
Hi, David, boring middle-class guy. And I'm here to hopefully help satisfy my insatiable curiosity.
Okay, good reason.
Hi, I'm Paula from Apex, and I've been here before, but I've done a lot of self-study and transcendental meditation, and I'm very hearing impaired. So I just want to say thank you, thank you, thank you for wearing a microphone, because
yeah.
I had to stop coming here because I couldn't hear what was being said, and I am just ecstatic to see you wearing a mic.
Hi, my name is Misty, and I'm actually going to talk for my son, Vaughn, who's a little shy.
Okay.
I'm from Raleigh and the mother of five boys, age 30 to 11. So just we've always been interested in it, and I thought it was just a neat thing for us to share together. Vaughn's number four of the five, so we're having
a great
journey for us.
Yeah. I got four kids, three boys and a girl. So, I'd have to stop and think. 30? 30 to 24. I'm the Brady Bunch, so we got two and two. So Well, I really appreciate you guys taking the time to share this with me. It helps me a lot to kind of see where we're at and what's going on. There's been a couple times where I've had class and I've got what I call ringers, where it's like, you know, they've been studying for 20 years and they're checking it out, but it's trying to figure out, oh, that's happened to me a couple of times. So this is Buddhism in a nutshell, and we're going to keep it there. Okay, we'll deep dive on a couple of subjects, but literally we're going to be getting together for 5 nights. We basically will try to start at 7 and be done at 8:30 so that you can expect that from me. But let me give you a little bit of a brief history of me. Again, my name is Sandy, and I have been studying Buddhism literally on my own since I was a child. My mom and dad were in the military, Air Force. My dad was Air Force. So I lived all over the world. And back in the day, my mom and dad, my dad was Lutheran and my mom was Catholic, and they had to elope. Okay, so there was a little bit of religious struggle along the way at the beginning. And so literally they opened up the world to us children. I have an older brother and a younger sister. And they explored religion and faith and spirituality with us. I'm really one of the lucky ones. My brother's Catholic, my sister's Lutheran, and I'm Buddhist. There you go. I'm actually married to a Christian-based gentleman who is also the chaplain of his Masonic Lodge, and it works very well because we have a lot of people that ask us, you come over to our house, and we've got Buddhas and Jesus and Bibles and Torahs and just everything. We've got a mix of all faiths in our home, and we think that it makes us actually better. I'm a better Buddhist because of him, and he's a better Christian because of me. That's the way we kind of talk about it. And to us, it's really not about religion per se, but it's about being better people, and we kind of keep it there. There's a wonderful book by the Dalai Lama called Beyond Religion, and that's where my husband and my family, we try to really take our lives. So, again, I'm really kind of one of the lucky ones because I was exposed as a young age, but being in the military, and we lived around, and my father was from Minnesota, so you might hear some Minnesota coming out there every once in a while, and that is really... it's a beautiful place, a lot of beautiful people, but it's very white Lutheran, so I didn't have a lot of places to go when I was younger, and we were living there, so I did a lot of self-study. So I studied for years and years and years, but it was a lot of self-study, and that leaves a lot of black holes. And when I came to the center about 6 years ago and started actually working with Geshe Gelug and Geshe Sangpo and the community here, it was like all of a sudden I just felt like I came home, because a lot of you are talking about being self-studiers, and that's really what it is. We have, a really good basic knowledge. And then actually studying with a real teacher really takes it all to the next level, and I hope that you all can experience that, because there's a little bit of a difference between experiential knowledge and theoretical knowledge, and that's what I've found here. So... I think that I've taken all of the courses here. We have a 2-year Discovering Buddhism course. I finished that. And that was, I found, again, very beneficial because, you know, you think you know all this. You really don't know what you don't know. And working with Geshe Gelug and all of the teachers here, all of a sudden you have a lot of those little, I call them aha moments. Oh, that's what that means. So you know, I'm continually learning. I look at this as a lifetime of learning for me. I've been studying, you know, Buddhism forever, and I will continue, because at the moment you start to think that you know, you get it, then another level peels off. But I'm really fortunate to be in the place that I'm at with that. For those of you, a little bit of logistics, the restrooms are right around the corner. If you walk out that door and go to the left, feel free anytime, okay, if the need is there. There's usually some water out there. Sometimes we have the hot water going. If you would like some tea, feel free to bring it in. Try not to spill. Do the best you can. There's cups and mugs. If you get a cup of water or a mug of water, when you're finished with it, keep going right past the restrooms. There's a kitchen back there, and you can wash it just like you're in your own house and put it in the drain and let it dry, because that way I don't have to do dishes here when class is over, because I've got plenty at home of my own that... that needs to be. So this is very much a very comfortable place. We are almost 99% volunteers here. This is Susie. She's my class assistant tonight. And we have a young gentleman that's helping out at the bookstore. So we're all volunteers here. So I'm going to do a couple of commercials to say that as volunteers, We do all of these classes literally for free. We don't charge any fees. We're one of the few centers actually in the world, in part in our organization called the FPMT, that really operates on a donation basis. So as you're going along this class, if you feel like you've gotten anything out of it, we've got donation boxes around, and we appreciate every little bit just to help with the lights and everything else, because it's we consider this our center, and it's all part of our family, and generosity is one of the six perfections. We'll talk about that later. We're going to be meeting for five classes, April 23rd through, I think, about May 21st. I don't think that we have any interruptions this class. Sometimes we have special ceremonies or something going on, but I think we can go straight through. Parking, you can see that sometimes we'll get busy. This is a nice size class, so I don't think we have to worry about it, but we will have, you know, drop-offs and gains throughout the time. We have no tests. This is a discussion. There's no tests. There's no quizzes, nothing like that, so you can just enjoy the class. We do have recommended books for reading if you choose. When you go on to Kadampa Center's website, so you go to Kadampa Center, and then you see spiritual programs, and then there's a drop down that talks about introduction classes, beginner classes. If you go to introductory classes, I'm trying to go through the chain here, you'll find the Buddhism in a Nutshell page. At the bottom of that page, all of the handouts that I'm talking about are on that page, and you can download them and print them. They're all there, because it's got some of the meditations that we'll be using. Those of you that have taken Meditation 101, we do tend to do a lot of synchronicity between these two beginner classes, Buddhism in a Nutshell, Meditation 101. Those classes flip. This one will be going for 5 weeks, and there'll be a brief break, and then Meditation 101 will start again, and then there'll be a brief break. Buddhism in a Nutshell will start again. So these introductory classes flip. Some of the best books, Buddhism in a Nutshell, this is the book that really is a lot of the course explanation. Venerable Amy Miller, who is a American Tibetan nun, and she is up at Milarepa, although I think she's moving to another monastery. She helped to organize this class and wrote this, and this is a great book. Everything that I'm going to be talking about is in this book and more. Okay? She's got a CD that's in the back that also has all of the audio. Now, she's basically got about 5 2-hour sessions here, whereas we've got 5 hour-and-a-half sessions. We'll have discussion and questions. She doesn't have to do that. So there's a lot more information that's going to be in this book, taught by a phenomenal teacher that is really great to listen to. So if you're piqued at all, this is a great book to get. Some of the meditations people always ask, so this is another book, How to Meditate. We'll be going over some of the things. The meditations that we do in this class with some of the handouts, a couple of them are in here, but written in a little bit different way, but you might find that interesting. So this is another good one. Buddhism for Dummies is phenomenal, okay, for a lot of the basic information, okay, for somebody who doesn't want to read cover to cover, you just want to find something out. This is a great book just to go straight to the heart of it, to some of the historical and definitions and things. I recommend this one. I did look, and I don't see it out there. We've got Meditation for Dummies. I don't see this one out there, but I know that this is available at, you know, any of the bookstores or online. And I've probably gone through about 10 of these copies. I loan them out and then just rebuy them. So that's a great one for that. I'm also going to do a plug for Discovering Buddhism, which is our kind of our mid-level class. So you take Meditation 101, and then you take Buddhism in a Nutshell, and then you think, now what? We'll talk about this at the fifth class, too. But we have a wonderful course called Discovering Buddhism. And this is actually a 14-module course that takes 2 years to cover. This is 5 to 6 weeks for each course. And one of the main reasons I'm going to talk about this is that we have 5 weeks to skip over everything in Buddhism. So like karma and all of these big concepts where we're going to have, you know, like a half an hour in a course, you know, night, where they'll take 5 weeks to deep dive on each of these subjects. So I've got, this is kind of the teaser course, and then if you take this course, and this is all led by some of our, you know, advanced students, and they're really great teachers. And so if you're piqued at all, we have the next step for you, okay? So that's a great one. Everybody always asks the favorite books. I'm going to get it out of the way right now. The Art of Happiness by the Dalai Lama is probably one of my all-time favorite books. And so this is probably a great beginner book for everybody, too, just to touch on things. It's written in a very engaging style. And so this one I recommend highly. We do have some copies out there. So there, I got all that stuff out of the way. This is all logistic night. Now, okay, I think I got through everything. You're going to discover. Now, first of all, I haven't had a chance to lead this class for a long time. And I love this class. This is one of my all-time favorite classes. And I tend to get a little excited. I'm a teacher that gets up and talks and walks, and I should say leader. We have phenomenal, very highly trained, very skilled teachers here, including two real, honest-to-goodness Tibetan monks from India, and Nepal, Geshe Gelug Choda and Geshe Sangpo. I'm going to tell you a little bit about Kadampa Center, but before I'm going to do that, I'm going to tell you a little bit more about me, because we're going to start talking. I'm going to get through all the logistics tonight, and we're going to run out of time every single time. And so just bear with me, and we'll get it figured out, okay? I like questions. I like conversation. I don't know everything. If I can't answer it, I'm going to write it down, and I will talk to Geshe and get you an answer, okay? I'm not going to pretend like I know everything that you're going to ask me. I am going to try very, very hard to keep this at the beginning level and try not to deep dive, okay? Because we have a place for that, and I just want to My job here and my intention is just to get you guys on that first step of the ladder to at least understanding a little bit more. We are not trying to convert anybody here. This is not about converting people to Buddhism. It's about explaining it so that you can make choices of what you would like to do, give you some tools that you can use or not. The things that we ask of you is that you listen to these things, ask questions, think about it, and decide for yourself if this is something that you can use or not use, these meditation skills, some different things. If there's something you don't understand, ask me. If there's something you're thinking, well, that sounds a little bit weird, because believe me, by class five, you're going to be going, oh, Sandy, I don't know. You know, I always used to put this imaginary bookshelf up there, so if something happened that I didn't understand, I'd stick it on the shelf, and I guarantee you, somewhere along the line, you know, it's like, oh, that's what that means. So we'll get it figured out, but this is going to be audience participation, so be ready for that. I'm going to ask when we do that we do speak into the microphone. Why? We're doing an audio recording of these classes, and we put them up online in our members-only area. We'll talk about how you can become members if you're interested, because we like to listen to these. They're very helpful. I've been studying for a long time, and I've been coming here for a long time, and one of the reasons that I love leading this class is that it brings me back to basics, okay? And it's always that constant reminder. The very first time I led this class, I was all getting organized, my book and all the stuff that I'm doing, and trying to make sure I'm going to say all the right things. I got, you know, this, because we didn't have the PowerPoint screen, so I made all these things. I was all ready and just gung-ho to do it. Got in my car, and my car would start. And I had a huge class here, and I went into total panic mode, right? My car's not starting. I'm completely flustered. And my Christian-based husband comes out, and he says to me, so, are you walking or are you talking? Because you're way flustered right now. And he says, this is the whole point of all of these teachings that you do, so that you don't go like that. It was like, boy, boom, right there. So I'm again in that same position, because I've been so busy lately that, you know, I didn't get a chance to organize. I didn't get a chance to make all my books, and I'm feeling like, okay, are you walking or are you talking, as to how this really goes, because Buddhism to me is not a religion. It is a way of life. It is what I try to do in my life every day, and truly every moment of every day, and it is a training that helps me deal with life, be happier in my life. So I look at this as kind of an everyday study and all the time. And so I love this class because it brings me back to basics. And I need that. I need the reminder every single time. So the first thing that we're going to do is let's just get started with a basic meditation, okay? We're gonna try to do a meditation at the beginning of every class and a brief meditation at the end of every class, just to kind of get you guys a little bit familiar with it. I've heard that there's a lot of people out there that have done everything from transcendental meditation and have taken the Meditation 101, so a lot of this is going to be very familiar to you, which is a good thing, because meditation is about becoming familiar with your mind. We are sitting in a gompa, which is a place of meditation. It's a place of becoming familiar with. So we're going to start to become familiar with our minds, and we're going to take a moment to just do a brief meditation and kind of walk through a few things with this. Tibetan Buddhism, everything that we're going to talk about is from a Tibetan Buddhist perspective. And from a Tibetan Buddhist perspective, there are two types of meditation: concentration meditation and analytical meditation. All right, and everything about this is about common sense. Okay, so I'm going to explain a 7-point meditation. Come on in. You're good. We're just getting ready to start our first meditation. And then we'll go on to I'm doing good. We got an hour. So the first thing we're going to do is we're going to talk about a 7-point meditation posture. I'm going to explain it, and then we'll go through it. The reason that we have this posture is there's nothing holy about sitting on a cushion. Okay? There's nothing religious about this at all. This is about finding a comfortable, stable position so that you can let go of worrying about your body while you work with your mind. Okay? So if you're sitting in a chair, that's great. If you're sitting on the ground, that's great. If you're sitting on a cushion, that's great. So wherever you would like to be and be comfortable, you're good. So we're going to walk through the 7-point meditation posture, and we're just going to get comfortable. So the first thing, if you're sitting on the ground, you can sit in the and I'm going to probably read some of this just so I can make sure I say it properly. And then we'll go through it, because half the time I don't think about it in these words. I think about it a little bit differently. So the first thing is you're thinking about your legs. If you're sitting on the ground, whether you're in a cross-legged position, the Vajra position, half Vajra, whatever's going to be stable for you and comfortable for you. If you're sitting on a chair, I want you to sit up just a little bit so that your back is straight. We're not going to be leaning back. Sit up in the front and have both of your legs, you know, firmly on the ground or on a cushion, with both feet touching the floor. And again, what this is about is giving you a stable foundation. Okay? Your arms, okay? From a Tibetan Buddhist aspect, we have our arms loosely in our lap. We have our right hand lefting on our left, and we touch our thumbs lightly together. So it's kind of a teardrop position. And we put this down slightly below our navel, and that leaves our arms a little bit loose when you do this. Now, what is that? Why is that? It's about letting air flow, okay? So it's about being comfortable and it lets air flow, because you're hoping to be sitting for, you know, however long you're going to sit. And so this is, again, it's a common sense way of looking at it. So some people who have done it, if you're more comfortable putting your hands on your knees, you know, it's kind of, I will explain how we do it in this tradition, and then you kind of take it and work with it and figure out what's going to work for you. You've seen people, I think, in the transcendental, a lot of other meditations are doing hand mudras, which mean different things and have different concentrations. So that's another class. This one, performing that teardrop, and it's kind of just below the navel. Your back is very important, okay? You want to have a straight back, but still be comfortable. So it's not slouching. It's a straight back with your shoulders back, and kind of what I call a regal position, okay? And what that's doing is you're opening up your lungs, okay? Again, this is all about common sense type of things. You're opening up your lungs to breathe, so it's a straight back, kind of what I call, again, it's that kingly or regal position. And you kind of think of your spine as coins, just to be a little comfortable. If you're sitting on the ground, sometimes it helps to be a little bit forward on the cushion. And again, this is trial and error, so you find what's going to be comfortable for you. If you're sitting in a chair, again, sit a little bit to the front. Okay, your eyes. In the beginning, a lot of people will meditate with their eyes closed, okay, because it allows you to focus and shut everything out that you're seeing, so you don't just get distracted. And again, in a perfect when everything's perfect and you're totally practiced, you basically are looking unfocused, maybe about 5 feet in front of you. You don't close your eyes because that can cause you to get sleepy, but you don't want your eyes to be up here because then you have all that distraction. So whatever, again, this is practice, trial and error for you guys to see what's comfortable. You can close your eyes if you want to. And when you're doing this at home, if you're trying to do more, it's kind of just keeping your eyes in a little bit of a half-opened, half-closed, you know, just down here so that you're not really focusing on anything. Because you're trying to avoid, again, you're trying to avoid being too sleepy or being too distracted. Your jaw and mouth. Okay, so you don't want to be a clenched jaw because we're trying to relax, but you don't want to have just a totally open mouth. So just keep your mouth slightly closed. We're usually breathing through our nose, if possible, and your tongue is resting on the roof of your mouth, right behind your front teeth, so right above the palate. Why? Because that avoids creating a lot of saliva. You're trying to get yourself, again, in a position that you can hold for a long time. If you're swallowing, blinking, you're kind of thinking about your body. So that's just a little trick to just put your tongue on the roof of your mouth, just below the, just behind the teeth. And again, your jaw and your mouth are kind of relaxed. Your head is slightly tilted forward, so it's not down and it's not up. It's slightly tilted forward. A little trick that works for me is I tend to think if there's a string at the crown of my head that I can pull, I can feel it elongating my spine. And so I'll think about it that way. So its head finally starts just slightly tipped. That helps with the eyes. You're not falling asleep and you're not looking up. And that just kind of opens you all up. So, again, just kind of get a little familiar with this position. Think about those 7 points again. Your legs, your arms, your back, your eyes, your jaw, your mouth, your tongue, and your head. So first just do a scan down your body and see if you have any issues right now. And the first thing we're going to do is take 3 deep breaths. And we want the stomach and lungs to expand. So 3 deep breaths. Now allow your breathing to return to its normal pattern. We begin every meditation by setting our motivation, which is the reason that we're doing this. Why am I doing this? Why, out of all the things I could be doing right now, am I sitting in a chair or sitting on a Krishna Kadampa Center with my eyes closed? Now, whatever reason that prompted you to do it is great. If you're just here out of curiosity, that's good. If you're here to see if this quiets your mind and helps relieve some stress, that's great. If you're here because you want to try to be a kinder person, that's wonderful. But it's said that the very best motivation, the most powerful one, is that if we can think even of something as simple as this, sitting quietly for a couple of minutes is being done by me so that I can benefit all living beings. And I know that sounds just ridiculous right now. But even just thinking that way, even if you just kind of have to force it out a little bit. This is said to make an imprint on our mind because of the laws of karma that will inevitably ripen in a positive way in the future. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about this. We are imprinting on our minds right now that this positive thought will have a beneficial result at some point in the future. So this is the Mahayana great motivation. So I want you just to sit and think that way for just a minute. Just sitting here is going to be a benefit for every sentient being. So I'm going to give you just a minute. Now, having set that motivation, we're now going to begin the actual meditation. So we're going to do a very, very simple, but not easy, concentration meditation. All we're going to do is pay attention to our breath, the movements of our breath in and out through our nostrils. We place our awareness on that. Nothing more, nothing less. The mind perceives the breath. You can almost say that the mind and the breath are one. We're not describing the breath. We're not counting the breath. We're just directly experiencing the breath. Anytime that you notice that your mind is experiencing something else, you're thinking of something else, a sound, a sore muscle, you're thinking about what you're going to do when you leave the center, if you're thinking about something that happened earlier today, just drop that. Let that thought go and come back to thinking about your breath in and out, over and over. Your mind is becoming familiar with the experience of the breath. And that's the meditation. I want you just to think about your breath coming in and out right at the front of your nose. Almost feels a little maybe cooler when it's coming in than when you're breathing out. We're going to end this first meditation with what we call a dedication. It's to mentally pat yourself on the back, acknowledge that you've done something that's maybe a little out of the ordinary for you. So tell yourself, good job. Reaffirm that our motivation is just a simple meditation, and may it make on our mind stream an impression that it will ripen in a way that benefits all living beings. So just think that way again for just a minute. And bring your attention back to the room. Now that was a very, very brief initial concentration meditation. Again, we've got concentration meditation and analytical meditation. So if you think about it like this, when you go to work out at the gym to lift weights and stuff, you start and you're working out so that you can get your muscles ready for whatever your event is going to be or whatever you're trying to do. That's what we're doing with concentration meditation. We're working on our mind, okay? We're trying to strengthen our mind so that when we go into an analytical concentration, when we're actually going to sit down and try to do something with our mind, we've prepped it, okay? So it's a practice. So that's basically, from a Tibetan Buddhist perspective, those are the two kinds of meditation. From a Western perspective, we tend to think meditation is zoning out or trying to think of nothing. From a Buddhist perspective, that's not possible. Your mind cannot think of nothing. So we give it something to think about. And that's how we try to yoke that mind, okay? So meditation is one of the strongest tools that we have. So a lot of what we're going to talk about, I'll try to put it into this perspective that you can meditate on it, because that's actually what we do. We learn these things, we study these things, then we go sit down and we think about it. Okay? And we question it. We question everything. That's part of what I challenge you all to do. You're going to hear a lot of different things. Question it. Okay? Don't just because I say it that it's so, just because the Buddha said it that it's so, doesn't work that way in Buddhism. You get to question it. Okay. Any questions about anything that I've talked about so far today? So far, meditation, anything like that? Open. I promise we're going to get some more fun stuff. Okay, so the rest of the class, and we've got about 45 minutes, we're just going to do kind of that brief introduction of Buddhism and Kadapa Center. And the first, I got to stand up now because I've got to get you guys talking. Okay, Kadapa Center. We are a Buddhist center in the Galupa tradition. And what does that mean? We're part of the FPMT, the Foundation for the Preservation of the Mahayana Tradition, way back in the 60s. Remember when all the hippies were going over to Nepal and stuff to go up and see the Dalai Lama and climb the mountain and hang out, right? smoke a little happy herbs, and that was happening all over in the 60s, right? They've made movies about it. I can't even remember all of the fun movies that were made about that. There was a couple of monks that decided if the West is coming over here to learn this, that maybe we should go there. And up here, you've got the Dalai Lama in the middle, and we've got on your left, this is Lama Yeshe, on your right is Lama Zopa Rinpoche. These pictures up here, Lama Yeshe and Lama Zopa Rinpoche came over to the United States way back in the 60s and started actually teaching Tibetan Buddhism, because people were asking, people were looking, and it really started to spread. And there's now 170 odd centers worldwide that are part of the FTMT that have been founded to help teach Mahayana Buddhism in the Gelupa tradition, which is the same tradition as the Dalai Lama. We'll get into more details about the actual schools of Buddhism. But they came over and started this FPMT way back about, I'm not going to get these perfectly straight, sometime between 15 and 20 years ago, they started a study group here in Raleigh, and started, it grew from a study group to become a center. They reached out to Lama Zopa Rinpoche and Lama Yeshe, and the students here actually started in the living room of one of our members, and it just started growing from there. And so from there, 15, 20 years, now we're sitting in a full-blown center with, you know, the monks are here. We have two Geshes right here at this center, and we've just grown so much. In fact, we're having a lot of growing pains right now because, again, as an all-volunteer group, it's wonderful that we have so many people coming and checking everything out. Our name, Kadampa Center. Kadampa actually means those who take the Buddhist words as a way of life. So we're actually as a personal way of life. So that's where the word Kadampa came from, why we chose the word Kadampa Center. You'll see that term used in a lot of different ways, but that's what it means to us. So in the Gelupa tradition, which is what we are in the same lineage as the Dalai Lama. So our teacher, Geshe Gelug Choda, his teacher is Ken Rinpoche, who's actually the abbot of Sarajay Monastery, one of the largest monasteries in this tradition, and he was appointed by the Dalai Lama. Okay, so I like to think that the Dalai Lama hears about what goes on here at Kadampa Center. That's really very special to me. I do. I think that way. And Ken Rinpoche, there's a picture. He's right here. Ken Rinpoche is right here. This is our teacher's teacher. So I'm talking about this so that you start to understand what the word lineage means, because our teacher, Geshe Gelug, can tell you his lineage through Ken Rinpoche and all the way back, and the teachings that we are learning are directly from Shakyamuni Buddha. Okay, so that's the lineage. Why is that important to us? When I was looking to study Buddhism, I wanted to find a lineage that was, my words, the real deal. Okay? Because this way I knew exactly what I was going to be getting. It wasn't somebody's interpretation of it. It's actually the real lineage of what has come down through Shakyamuni Buddha, through the Dalai Lama, through Ken Rinpoche, through Geshe, to me. And that's important to me. It's just like when you go to college. You want to know what you're studying. You want to know how does that professor, you know, what is their teaching degree, so you know that you're going to be taught well. So lineage is a really big, really important word to us. I'm going to make sure I stay on track because I can go all the way down rabbit holes. Okay, so we probably have about 300 to 400 very active members here at Kadampa Center, but we probably have 1,000 or more worldwide that we've touched in some way, shape, or form. Lama Zopa Rinpoche does actually come here, okay? He does actually come here and teach here, right here at Raleigh. Even though he has 170 centers worldwide, he actually does come to Kadampa Center. He was just here last year. He will be coming again. We do these two-week teachings with Lama Zopa Rinpoche when he's here up at Black Mountain. And there's, so if you're interested, he actually does come here and teach. We have a lot of different teachers that come. The FPMT is really good about sharing all of this, these knowledge, and these nuns and monks that have all of this vast knowledge do actually come through here. I think Venerable Amy Miller, didn't I just read that she's coming?
Yeah,
I think that the nun who helped to start this whole course will be visiting. Check our website constantly. Yes, sir. FPMT. I keep saying the. I should say the FPMT. FPMT. Foundation for the Preservation of the Mahayana Tradition. Okay, Foundation for the Preservation of the Mahayana Tradition. You can find a link to them on our website or just going there. Okay, there's a lot of phenomenal information on the FPMT. Also, Kadampa Center, kadampa-center.org. Here's the website. Here's me. Here's my email. If you have a question and you want to talk to me, email me directly, okay? I will always put that out there. Some people don't like to speak up in class, or if you need something, or if there's something special that I can help you with, feel free to email me. That's my own personal email, so I just like to put that out there. But, yeah, Amy Miller will be coming here. We always have the wish and the hope, so let's do some special prayers that the Dalai Lama will come. We're always working on that. Okay. So, Geshe Gelug Choda is our resident teacher. If you have a chance to come and listen to him, please do. He speaks fluent English. He is phenomenal. On Sundays, we have two teachings on Sunday, 9 to 10:15 and 10:45 to noon. The first teaching is always a little bit quieter. The second teaching is when a lot of the families come. We have an incredibly vibrant kids program. In fact, it's so well known that we have centers around the world are looking at us. We have some phenomenal organizers for our children's program. We have a teen program too, so you just have to check into some of that stuff. So Sunday teachings, yes. There's nothing this Sunday?
Because
of statutory. Oh. Please, explain.
Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, there's statue filling. So this is a rare Sunday that we don't have service.
We don't have a service, but is there going to be the statue blessing?
I think so, but I don't know when.
Okay, check the website. They've got all the updated information. So what she's talking about is the statue blessing over here. So a lot of us that are practitioners, we have home altars, okay? And for our altars at home, we have different, there's statues, okay, before they're blessed is kind of how we tend to think about them. And afterwards, we talk about them as emanations. So I'm going to explain some of that. All of this stuff that you see in here, all of the stuff that you see in here, you can think about as, and we'll, again, I'm going to talk about this over and over again. This is a way to work with your mind. These are tools. These are tools to work with your mind. Okay? It's not that Western type of thing of worshiping false gods, because they're not gods to us. They're representations. It's like pretending that the Dalai Lama is sitting here, because you'd act differently if he was here, wouldn't you? We'd all act differently if he was actually in this room. Right? So if we kind of put that in our heads, that they're really in this room, you tend to think a little bit differently. So, and all of these pictures and tankas and stuff, these are all lessons. There's a lesson in all of these tankas. There's a lesson in all of these different symbols, all of this symbolism. It all means something, but it's all a way to work with your mind. And we'll talk about a lot of this stuff in more detail, because you can kind of think of these things as a PowerPoint. All right, it's a visual representation of a teaching. Prayer flags, okay? The thought behind a prayer flag. All of these have prayers written on them, different prayers. When the wind blows through these prayer flags, it carries that prayer to the rest of the world. So you kind of, once you start thinking about these beautiful thoughts, it just kind of picks you up a little bit. So everything in here is all symbolism to work with your mind. So it's a lesson, because this is all about your mind. So Buddhism in a nutshell. Prince Siddhartha, Gautama, let's just kind of go through some of the history of this. This is all the dry stuff. Let's just go through all of the information, cut and dried factual stuff, and then we can move on to some of the fun stuff. I'm going to start moving faster. Okay, so Prince Siddhartha, young man born about 2,500 years ago. If you've read the book, you'll probably have more better knowledge than me. Born about 2,500 years ago to a very wealthy family, actually a king. Okay, when he was born, they actually had a seer come in and do a reading over him. And the seer told the king and his wife that your son is either going to be a great king or a great monk, a great spiritual leader. Okay, so the king, being just like any other dad, wanting his boy to follow into his footsteps, really wanted him to become a good king. So he tried to shield Siddhartha from all the things that would maybe take him down a more spiritual path. Right? So he kept him very cushioned, very cocooned. He didn't see anything that was sad, anything that was negative. He shielded him from anybody that was sick. He shielded him from anybody that passed away. He never saw any of those things. He was coddled, and he was raised in this just, you know, extreme wealth and beauty. It was said that he was very good athlete. He was a quick study. He did well with learning everything. You know, so he lived this golden life all these years and just never knew anything bad at all. You know, that's something that we actually want that for all of our kids, don't we? You know, I try to take every single one of my kids and wrap them up in cotton wool and do that. Well, then Prince Siddhartha decided one night that he snuck out of the castle, okay? He snuck out, he took one of his buddies, and they snuck off, and they went out into the real world. And when he was out there and he saw the real world, he saw what they call four sights. And again, I'm skipping over a lot of stuff. There's some great books out there if you'd like to read in more detail. But he saw four sights. He saw a sick person, he saw an old person, a dead body, and a wandering mendicant, a monk. So the first person sick, he sees the sick person over there, and he's going to his friend, what's that? Who's that? What's going on there? And his servant explained about sickness. We're all going to get sick. People get sick. Okay? And he was explaining what sick was, because Siddhartha had never been around that, and if he's totally shielded, he probably didn't have all of the germs that we all live with. And so that just shocked him. He saw an old person. So again, he's living in this castle where they just kept all of this beautiful, you know, stuff around him and beautiful people, and he saw a really old person, and that shocked him too. We actually tend to do a lot of that in our society, don't we? I mean, all you see on television is the beautiful people and how to stay beautiful. We try to do that too. So he saw an old person. He saw a dead body, and that was one of them that really, really totally shocked him. And how many in this room have ever even seen a dead body? This is actually more than I usually see, because we try to shield a lot of that. Okay, he saw a dead body, and that really, really bothered him to try to have his servants explaining what is death. Okay, so that's a tough conversation for even us. What is death? And then he saw a wandering mendicant, a monk, and he was asking about that. Why, in all of this squalor and all of this misery and all of this suffering that I see, who is that who doesn't seem to be completely depressed about all of this? Because he saw a monk that was able to deal with all of this and not be totally shocked. And so he was just fascinated by all of these things. So he saw these four sights, and they changed his life. And he decided he had to figure this out. He could not go back and live in the castle and have this life of excessive comfort and ease when all of this was going on in the world. So he left. He left the castle, took off his, you know, fancy clothes, cut his hair, and he went and he lived the life of an ascetic for about 6 years. So he went from having everything to having nothing. All right. He was actually working with, found these other, you know, monks that were trying to do the same thing. They're trying to figure out everything, and they thought the best way to do that is to just give up everything. Give up everything. Okay? Just try to exist on even down to one grain of rice a day, just water, and try to meditate and try to work with your mind, try to figure things out. So he literally went from one extreme all the way over to the other. And you've seen pictures. You've seen probably the statues where you can see Buddha, every single rib. You know, his face looks very skeletal. So he went from one extreme all the way to the other. And then it said that he was sitting on the bank of a river, and he saw a raft going by with a musician. And the musician had a conversation while he was playing his instrument. And the musician said, you know what, in order to get the perfect notes out of this, the strings can't be too tight and they can't be too loose. And so the Buddha interpreted that into the middle way. You can't go to one extreme or the other. You've got to come into more of the middle way. And as that kind of aha moment came to him, he realized that I'm so hungry, I'm so tired, I can't even exist in order to think about these things. So I've gone so far this way that it is in interrupting my thought process. It's interrupting my thinking because I'm just so hungry, tired, and it's too far the other way. So two extremes, the middle way. So then it is said that a young maiden from one of the neighboring communities found him and gave him some rice porridge and helped him gain his strength back. And so now he's thinking, you know what? I've had both extremes. I need to go and figure it out using this middle way. And at that point, he went and he sat in where they call Bodhaya, and he sat under a tree that they now call the Bodhi tree, and he looked at his mind. He literally sat down and just looked at his mind. For 6 years, he worked with his mind, okay, and not being a wealthy, coddled in comfort, but not being an ascetic. Okay, so he sat for 6 years. At the end of that time, and you can imagine all of that, those thoughts that we have in our daily life were just that self-doubt, and you can't figure this stuff out. Just at the end of that 6 years, he had all of these negatives coming at him that I'll never figure this out, I can't do it. They talk about it, and I'm not going to use a whole bunch of the Buddhist terms, Mara, throwing these delusional thoughts at him. But you can imagine, you've been in that situation where you're doubting yourself for whatever reason, where just all of this stuff, what, you can't do this, you can't do that. Well, he was feeling that. And he actually thought, you know what, yes, I can. And you'll see these pictures of Buddha actually, that's part of what they're telling in that story, is that he reached out and he touched the ground as if to call the earth to witness, to say, you know what, yes, I can. I can clear my mind. I can understand. I can become enlightened. And in that moment, he did become enlightened. So what does that mean? Enlightened one. Okay? From that point, we change from Prince Siddhartha to the Buddha, because the Buddha, that word Buddha, actually means enlightened one. Shakyamuni Buddha. Shakya means clan, so he's from this group. Sage, Muni means sage, wise one. And Buddha means enlightened one. So what does that word mean, enlightened? Okay? One of the things that we're going to do in this class is we're going to talk about getting everybody on the same page so that when I say a word, we're all thinking the same thing. Because we tend to communicate, but we don't communicate really well. So I'm going to give a glossary of terms. I'm going to give descriptions so that when we talk about things, we know what we're talking about. Enlightenment actually means full awakening. It means you're removing all obscurations, all negative, and you are fully developing all virtuous, all positive states of mind. So enlightenment means getting rid of everything negative in your mind and fully developing all of your positive states of mind. That's enlightenment. Okay? He's not, Buddha, not being a god. He's not a god. He was a man who became enlightened. He was a man who had a realization. Because he was not a god, he couldn't just say, I make you enlightened, I make you enlightened. But the best thing that he could do was teach. Because if he did it, he said, any of us can do it. It's nothing that is that hard to do. We can all do it. It's not easy, okay? But there is a path. There is a step, okay? There are steps that we can take to become enlightened. So, since he's not a god and he couldn't just give us all enlightenment, he taught. So, a teacher from a Buddhist perspective is not like a teacher like we think of a college teacher, or what you guys might be thinking of me as a teacher. I'm not a teacher from a Buddhist perspective. I'm leading this class, okay, but I'm not a teacher. Geshe Gelug is a teacher, okay, Geshe Tsongpo is a teacher, the Dalai Lama is a teacher. That's what we call them, okay? From a Buddhist perspective, a Tibetan Buddhist perspective, when you use that word teacher, you mean something else, okay? So we think about it as college professors. Okay, if Geshe will say, I'm not your teacher, I'm your Dharma friend. From a monk's perspective, for them to be a teacher and student relationship is a very special relationship. It's a very special relationship, and it comes with a lot of very special conditions. Okay, and that, so we're not going to get into this too deeply, but when you accept and when you choose and when you ask for a teacher in Buddhism, especially in this tradition, you're asking for a huge commitment, and you are then accepting a huge commitment. So you'll hear people talking about different things, and again, I'm going to try to explain all of this terminology, because you're going to run into a lot of the stuff if you continue down this path. So we think of teachers when we say it, okay, from a Western standpoint, and we think college professor, high school professor, teacher, that type of thing, we have a very casual relationship with our teachers, right? When you're in the Buddhist world and you're talking about teacher, there's a very strong conditions for that, and it's a big commitment. So as you move forward and you start to decide that if you were going to move forward, let me be careful about saying that, and you want your spiritual guide, your spiritual leader, you have to make some very clear decisions, okay? So I just want to make sure that we understand what we're talking about here. So again, the Buddha went and he became enlightened. Now here's the other thing. So we sit here and we say we became enlightened. The best way to think about this, it's like Sir Isaac Newton. He discovered gravity, right? He discovered gravity. He didn't create gravity, right? He discovered the law of gravity. Think about it like that. The Buddha didn't, you know, create enlightenment. He discovered it. So it's anything any of us can do. We discover that. So we can become enlightened if we go through these steps and processes and work on it. But if you think of the Buddha kind of like Sir Isaac Newton, the apple fell on his head and he got it. Okay, he's not a god. He was a man who became enlightened. Make sense? Everybody with me? Any questions? Okay. So, since he's not a god, he's a teacher. He started teaching. And we call the Buddhist teachings, we call it turning the wheel of Dharma. Okay? So in a way, again, I'll tell you the Sandeyisms of things, and y'all can figure out ways that it kind of sticks in your mind. So I think about it like this. When you have that big teaching where all of a sudden something kind of changes for you, all of a sudden you kind of get a little bit of that, oh, okay? That's kind of that turning of the wheel, okay, of Dharma. Okay? The first turning of the wheel of Dharma was actually at Sarnath. When he went back, okay, so he went off and became enlightened, and then he came out and he's going to teach. Well, guess who he ran into right off the bat? Those other monks he'd been studying with who were the ascetics. Okay, when they first saw him, they knew something was kind of different about him, but they didn't quite know what. It's like all of a sudden you look different, you're acting different, you're sounding different. So he actually sat down and he taught them what he learned. And it was at Sarnath, and the first thing that he actually taught was the Four Noble Truths. How many of you have even heard of the Four Noble Truths? That's kind of a big teaching. Okay, so we taught the Four Noble Truths. We're gonna be coming in and out of these Four Noble Truths this whole class. So again, let's just go through some terms. Dharma, we hear the word Dharma, okay? It means that which holds, that which protects. There's two kinds of Dharma. One is the actual conventional Dharma, which are the teachings and the actions, okay, Dharma. And the other is the ultimate Dharma. That's the realizations that you get along the way. So the aha moments. Okay, so it's not just the physical teachings, the Dharma, but it's actually knowing it and living it. Okay, when it changes you, because now it holds you and protects you. Okay, these books here, that if I went up to this altar and pulled this down, these are the Buddhist teachings. These are 84,000 teachings up here. All right, all along here. If I pulled these down, none of us do because they're in a different language. Okay, Geshe Sanpo will pull them down and read them. But mostly we're not actually studying the Buddhist teaching. We're studying the commentaries on them. And all of the books that you see out there, you'll see all these different commentaries of all of these different monks who are explaining some of these things. But those are the 84,000 teachings of the Buddha up there. But bottom line, but if you take nothing else from this class, the bottom line is all of this. These teachings, that altar, everything that's on the altar, everything that's on these walls, everything that's hanging from the ceiling, everything, period, in Buddhism is about the mind. Period. It's a way to work with your mind. Okay? If you take nothing else, get that. Okay. I know, I'm so bad. I get so off track. Okay, so the spread. So Buddhism actually started in India. Okay, that's where all of this stuff started. And it spread. India, Sri Lanka, Asia, Southeast Asia, China, Japan. It just started spreading over in the East. And there are many different Buddhist traditions. Okay, because of the socio-geographic variation, because of the ethnologies of all of these different countries, Buddhism took on a little bit different flavor, okay, in each of these countries. But the basic core is all the same, okay? You'll see in Thailand, the statues all kind of had the tall, pointy hats, okay? So you'll even see different emanations of the Buddha. It's all the same. It's all the same. It's no different than being over here in our Christian world and the Methodists and the Lutherans. It's all pretty much the same. Little nuances. It's all got the same core. There are two main strains, the Hinayana, the Theravadan, and the Mahayana. Okay? And again, it's all very, very similar. Hinayana is really more about the individual release from suffering, reaching nirvana. Okay? So this is more the individual studies, and Mahayana is more the universal. Okay? So not only reaching nirvana, but reaching enlightenment. So they call them, when you're in the reading, you will see one's called the lesser vehicle and one's called the greater vehicle. That's really kind of a misnomer because one isn't greater or lesser. Because you know what? It's just like if you were going to try to save somebody who was drowning, you better know how to swim before you jump in. So we actually have to do it all, right? So they're just different focuses. The Mahayana is the main strain that we're in, okay? With our Galupa tradition. This is where I was trying to catch and redo some things. I'm going to bring this one up. Switch real quick. I haven't taught this class in so many years that this thing just started shredding on me. So I was redoing it and I ran out of time. So in Tibetan Buddhism, which is what we're in the lineage, okay, we have four different schools, and all of these denominations are found here in the West, okay? The schools are Sakya, Nyingma, Galupa, Kagyu. Yeah, Kagyu is the the Kadampa, the Karmapa. Okay, so, but the Dalai Lama is who is the head of all of these, okay? Even though the Dalai Lama is in the Galupa tradition, he's the spiritual head of all of the traditions, okay? And he's just recently stepped down in the last few years from the political leader of Tibet with all of those things, and we're not even going to go there, so no politics in here. So again, we've got the Dalai Lama, Lama Yeshe, Lama Zipa Rinpoche. We talked about them. We talked about Geshe Gelug. We also have Geshe Sangpo. So Geshe, you're going to hear this term, Geshe. Geshe is a title. It's kind of like professor or doctor. So Geshe means that they have studied 30-plus years in their school. Okay, so it's Geshe is a title. You'll also hear us say things like Geshe La, okay, Lama La. We have all of this. The La at the end is a form of respectful endearment. You know, you can even say Sandy La, Sizzy La, okay? It's a form of respectful endearment, so you'll hear us say Geshe La quite a bit. Geshe Gelick has been here for 14, 15 years now, teaching. Again, he's got fluent English. He's phenomenal. I've learned more from Geshe La in the 5 years that I've been here than in the previous, you know, decades of book reading that I had done. So again, Kadampa Center is our name, those who put the teachings of the Buddha into actual practice. Okay? So we talked about Buddhism being about the mind. Everything is about the mind, developing the positive states of mind, because positive states of mind lead to happiness. And removing the negative states of mind, they cause suffering. Let's go over here. The Four Noble Truths. Okay. First Noble Truth. The truth of suffering. There is suffering. There is suffering in the world. Second Noble Truth. The truth of the cause of suffering. Third Noble Truth. Truth of the cessation of suffering. Fourth Noble Truth. Truth of the path to the cessation of suffering. Okay, so what does all that mean? It looks like a lot of suffering up there to me. Okay? So let's talk about this, because we're going to go through some of this stuff. The first thing I want to do is let's define that word suffering. Okay? Again, we have our Western definitions, and sometimes they don't completely translate properly. Okay? So when we think of suffering, what do you normally think of when you're thinking of suffering? Mental suffering, physical suffering. Okay. So I want us to think about this. When you see the suffering in this class, I want you to think the word dukkha. Dukkha. Okay? And why am I saying that? Because I want you to think about suffering in a little bit bigger picture. Okay, that's a Sanskrit. Because there's kind of a fuller idea of suffering from a Buddhist perspective. Now, if you flip this around, because like I said, it looks very unhappy up there. Okay? Suffering, suffering, suffering. And actually, flip it around, because all of the Buddhist monks and nuns that I have seen, it's like that old Harry Met Sally movie, I want some of that. They are the most joyful people I have ever seen. I want that. Okay, and no matter what their conditions, no matter what is going on, okay, they have that. And it is possible. It is possible. They go through as many things as we do. The Dalai Lama is a good example, okay, because it's not, we have the choice. We have the choice of how we go through our lives. We have the choice of how we deal with things. We have the choice. I find this so empowering. Okay, so if you flip this around, the truth of happiness, the truth of the cause of happiness, okay, the truth of the stopping of the suffering or gaining happiness, and how do I do it? I want it. I'll do it. Okay, so flip it around, because the suffering, 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 I mean, I even have people say, all you Buddhists ever talk about is suffering. We're the happiest people I know, okay? There's a great group of people here that are true practitioners. We're not perfect. We're human. We're not Buddhist yet. We're practicing. That's why we call it practice. Okay? So the first noble truth, the truth of suffering, what's the first thing we have to do? It's kind of like the 12-step program with alcoholics. What's the first thing you have to do? Acknowledge. Admit that you've got a problem. So it's like going to the doctor. Okay, I'm sick. Before you go to the doctor, you've got to know that you're sick. Okay, then the truth of the cause of the suffering. So the first thing the doctor's going to do is say, oh, you have this, or you have that. So we're going to define it, right? The truth of the cause, what's going on. Then we're going to go to the truth of the cessation, okay? So we know what's going on. Now what's the medicine, right? What's the medicine? That's what this one is. What is the medicine? Tell me about the medicine. But it doesn't do any good to get those pills and have them sit on the counter if you don't take them. So that's the truth of the path. You actually have to do it. Okay? It's very easy to go get that. You know, my husband's a good one for getting that, you know, pills, and then he doesn't take them. Well, you know, what good is that going to do? You can know about it all day, but if you don't practice it, you know, it doesn't work. So it's as simple as that. And we're going to come back to these again and again. I'm going to go just a little bit further on this. Okay. So we've got dukkha, we've got suffering. We know that what we're talking about here is if we can identify it, we can get rid of it, right? If we can identify it, we can get rid of it. Now, it does not mean that there isn't going to be ick that happens in your life, people passing away, illnesses that happen. But how we go through them, how we deal with them is what we're working on here. So literally, we have three types. Tibetan Buddhism is about lists. There's a list for everything. There's 5 of these, 10 of these, 20 of those, 3 of these. Okay? So it's all about lists. Think about it like that. You're not going to remember it, but just know there's a list somewhere on this, and it helps us to define it. This is a very scholastic course. Okay? So there are literally three types of suffering. One is the suffering of pain. I'm just going to write them out like that. Pain. Okay? So the suffering of pain. Ow, that hurts. You get hit by a car, that hurts. You know, cut something, that hurts. This is pain. This is real pain. Okay? The suffering of pain. 2 is the suffering of change. Okay? Everything changes, and we just don't like to accept that. You get fired from your job. Your brand new car that you just bought was in an accident. Now you don't have that brand new car. Your computer just died. Your iPhone just died, or somebody stole it. Suffering of change. We try to hang on to things, and it's going to change. The brand new car that you bought, you know, 2 weeks ago just got a scratch. It's not new. And as time goes by, it's going to get old. So it's changing. And your life changes, but why do we think it's going to always stay the same? The second something changes, in here, I'm too hot. You know, let's add the air conditioner. So we're going along 5 minutes later, well, now I'm too cold. Turn that down. Well, I'm too hot. Suffering of change. Okay? So pervasive, compounded suffering. So that all sounds real big words there. The fact that the world we live in, okay, that there's a basic unease in our world just because we live in life. Okay, none of us is going to get out of this alive. So there's a big one right there. Okay, we know that we're going to have ups and downs along the way. We know that people we care about are going to get sick and pass away. We know that people we care about are going to get ill and have to deal with these things. We know that that life itself is not perfect. And no matter what we do, we're going to be dealing with that stuff. Okay, so this pervasive, and I'm really kind of catching right on the edge of that, because there's a lot of, you know, I could say a couple of things, like, in many ways, this is the suffering of when you do get what you want. Because guess what? You can't keep it. It's going to slip away because of the world that we live in. Does that kind of make sense? Okay. So those are those three. I never have enough time. Okay. Let's stop here. Hold this thought. And let's do one brief, very brief meditation to close. We're already out of time. Next time we'll be talking a lot more, because you're going to be helping me fill this out. This first class, we have to get so much just a baseline down. But I'm one of those that I really like discussion classes. You do not have to, but once we get going, it's really much more fun, and you'll get so much more out of it if we actually do, you know, talk. So as we move forward, there'll be a lot more of that, because I just think you get so much more out of it if we do it that way. Okay. So let's just stop and take just a little bit of a breath. We made it through. I hope you were not bored. Been sitting here for an hour. Hour and a half. Okay, so just deep breath. try to remember those 7-point meditation posture. Okay, your legs, just work your way up the body. Your legs, your back, your arms and hands, your shoulders are back, your head is tipped forward a little bit, your tongue is down. Okay, and just take a few deep breaths. Okay, clear your mind a little bit. You managed to sit here and listen to that lady gab for an hour and a half, but you know what? You actually did it. You came, you listened. You know, hopefully just even a little bit of clarity, at least as to some of the basics of Buddhism. You know, we know what we're going to do for the next 4 times, but you actually came. You sat here. You took that step that you were thinking about doing, whether for months, weeks, years even, but you actually came. You are in the Kadampa Center. You are actually learning about different things that might help you be a happier person, and it might be of benefit to others. And so just you know, really, you know, kudos to you for actually doing it. It's not easy, especially to step in this Western world to a place that you're not sure what you're going to find when you get there. So just a couple of deep breaths. I'm going to give you just a minute, and then we're going to end. Okay, we dedicate these efforts. So when you think about it like this, whenever we do something, we want to set an intention. Why are we doing this? And we sort of want to set a dedication that kind of bookends the and acknowledges that we did it. So bring your attention back to the room. And as you go forward, okay, this week, think about that. Think about setting, you've got a big thing that you're going to do. Set an intention for what you want to come out of that thing. Okay, I try to set intentions in front of business meetings even. Here's what I want, kind of like setting goals. But instead of have the business part of it, have that little personal twist to it. You know, I'm going to sit in this meeting and these people usually frustrate me. I'm going to let them talk. I'm going to let them do it. I'm not going to let them ruffle me this time. I'm going to stay centered and focused. I'm going to take my breaths. You know, so if you center attention, it's really amazing how much difference you will go through your day like that. If you can, set your intention right off in the morning. I want to go through this day just for fun. I mean, let's just try this for a week. You wake up as soon as you can wake up. Think, wow, man, I'm grateful I even woke up. Some people don't. And you know what? I want to have a good day today. I'm going to have a good day, and I'm not going to let anybody out there bump me off that. Okay? And if they do, try to remember it and get back to it as soon as you can. Then at the end of the day, when you lay down to go to bed, think, dedicate. Everything I did today, what did I do good? You know, I did all those things really well. What did I do bad? Ooh, I could do better. You know, maybe tomorrow. I'll do better tomorrow. So it's setting intentions and dedicating. So if you can kind of wrap your day up and then take it to smaller things, it just makes you more mindful. So we'll have little tips and tricks about that. And I just gapped. I love this class. Anybody have any questions? Not yet? Are you going to be quiet this whole time? Okay, I promise next week we will talk a lot more. We had to get a lot of basic information out. Thank you so much for coming. If you have any questions, email me. Bring them next time. Write them down. Anything that I can do to help, definitely would like to have even just a minute with you, because I'm going to get you on that prayer list for that. And, ma'am, I can get you on a prayer list, too. This is the Kadampa Center prayer list, where people all over the world, we share these prayer lists. And there's actually a study done by, I think it was Duke University about 8 years ago, where they actually did a formal study about the power of prayer. And that's another one of those things that I just love, and we can talk about that. But anybody can get on the prayer list, because there are some big things that can happen with that. So, okay, run, be free. Thank you, thank you.